Chapter 7, Dangers and Deliverances. The ship I was now on as a passenger was on a trading voyage for gold, ivory, dyer's wood, and beeswax. It requires much longer time to collect a cargo of this sort than of slaves. The captain had begun his trade at Gambia, had been already 4 or 5 months in Africa, and continued about a year after I was with him. We ranged the whole coast as far as Cape Lopez, which lies about a degree south of the equinoctial, and more than 1,000 miles further from England than the place where I embarked. I had no business to employ my thoughts, but sometimes amused myself with mathematics. Excepting this, my life, when awake, was a course of most horrid impiety and profaneness. I know not that I have ever since met so daring a blasphemer. Not content with common oaths and imprecations, I daily invented new ones, so that I was often seriously reproved by the captain, who was a very passionate man and not at all circumspect in his expressions. A Jonah on board. From what I told him of my past adventures and what he saw of my conduct, especially toward the close of the voyage, when he met with many disasters, he would often tell me that to his grief he had a Jonah on board, and that a curse attended me wherever I went, and that all the troubles he met with in the voyage were owing to his having taken me into the vessel. Although I lived long in the excess of almost every other extravagance, I was never fond of drinking. My father has often been heard to say that while I avoided drunkenness, he should still entertain hopes of my recovery. But sometimes I would promote a drinking bout for the sake of a frolic, as I called it. Although I did not love the liquor, I was sold to do iniquity and delighted in mischief. The last abominable frolic of this sort I engaged in was in the River Gabon. The proposal and expense were my own. 4 or 5 of us one evening sat down upon deck to see who could hold out longest in drinking Geneva and rum alternately. A large seashell supplied the place of a glass. I was very unfit for a challenge of this sort, for my head was always incapable of bearing much strong drink. However, I proposed the first toast, which I well remember was some imprecation against the person who should start first. This proved to be myself. An amazing escape. My brain was soon fired. I arose and danced about the deck like a madman. While I was thus diverting my companions, my hat went overboard. By the light of the moon, I saw the ship's boat, and eagerly threw myself over the side to get into her, that I might recover my hat. The boat was not within my reach, as I thought, but perhaps 20 feet from the ship's side. I was half over and should in one moment more have plunged into the water, when somebody caught hold of my clothes behind and pulled me back. This was an amazing escape. I could not swim if I had been sober. The tide ran very strong. My companions were too intoxicated to save me, and the rest of the ship's company were asleep. So near was I to perishing in that dreadful condition, and sinking into eternity under the weight of my own curse. Another time, at Cape Lopez, some of us had been in the woods and shot buffalo or wild cow. We brought a part of it on board and carefully marked the place, as I thought, where we left the remainder. In the evening, we returned to fetch it. I undertook to be the guide. But night coming on, before we could reach the place, we lost our way. Sometimes we were in swamps up to the middle in water. And when we reached dry land, we could not tell whether we were walking toward the ship or wandering further away. Every step increased our uncertainty. The night grew darker, and we were entangled in inextricable woods, where perhaps the foot of man had never trod before. That part of the country is entirely abandoned to wild beasts, with which it prodigiously abounds. We were in a terrible state, having neither light food nor arms, and expecting a tiger to rush from behind every tree. The stars were clouded, and we had no compass to form a judgment which way we were going. Had things continued thus, we had probably perished. But it pleased God, no beast came near us. After some hours' perplexity, the moon arose and pointed out the eastern quarter. It appeared then, as we had expected, that instead of drawing nearer to the seaside, we had been penetrating into the country. By the guidance of the moon, we at length came to the waterside, a considerable distance from the ship. We got safe on board without any other inconvenience than what we suffered from fear and fatigue. These and many other deliverances were all at that time entirely lost upon me. The admonitions of conscience, which from successive repulses had grown weaker and weaker, at length entirely ceased. For a space of many months, if not for some years, I cannot recollect that I had a single check of that sort. At times I had been visited with sickness, and have believed myself near to death, but I had not the least concern about the consequences. I seemed to have every mark of final impenitence and rejection. Neither judgments nor mercies made the least impression on me. Sails for home. Our business being finished, we left Cape Lopez, and after a few days' stay at the island of Annabona to lay in provisions, we sailed homeward, about the beginning of January 1748. From Annabona to England, without touching at any intermediate port, is a very long navigation, perhaps more than 7,000 miles, if we include the circuit necessary to be made on account of the trade winds. We sailed first westward, till near the coast of Brazil, then northward to the banks of Newfoundland, with the usual variations of wind and weather, and without meeting anything extraordinary. On these banks we stopped half a day to fish for cod. This was then chiefly for diversion. We had provisions enough, and little expected those fish to be all we should have to subsist on. We left the banks March 1, with a hard westerly wind which pushed us fast homeward. Because of the length of this voyage in a hot climate, the vessel was greatly out of repair and unfit for stormy weather. The sails and cordage were worn, and many circumstances concurred to render what followed more dangerous. On March 9, the day before our catastrophe, I carelessly took up Stanhope's Thomas a Kempis, as I had often done before, to pass away the time. I read it with indifference, as if it was entirely a romance. However, while I was reading this time, an involuntary suggestion arose in my mind. What if these things should be true? I could not bear the force of the inference as it related to myself, therefore shut the book presently. My conscience witnessed against me once more, and I concluded that true or false, I must abide the consequences of my own choice. I put an abrupt end to these reflections by joining in with some vain conversation that came in the way. The Lord's time. By now the Lord's time was come, and the conviction I was so unwilling to receive was deeply impressed upon me. I went to bed that night in my usual security and indifference, but was awakened from a sound sleep by the force of a violent sea which broke on us. Much of it came down below and filled the cabin where I lay with water. This alarm was followed by a cry from the deck that the ship was going down or sinking. As soon as I could recover myself, I started to go up on deck, but was met on the ladder by the captain, who desired me to bring a knife with me. When I returned for the knife, another person went up in my place, who was instantly washed overboard. We had no leisure to lament him, nor did we expect to survive him long, for we soon found the ship was filling very fast. The sea had torn away the upper timbers on one side, and made the ship a mere wreck in a few minutes. I shall not describe the disaster in the marine dialect, which would be understood by few. Therefore, I can give you but a very inadequate idea of it. Taking in all circumstances, it was astonishing and almost miraculous that any of us survived. We had immediate recourse to the pumps, but the water increased against all our efforts. Some of us were set to bailing in another part of the vessel, that is, to lade it out with buckets and pails. We had but 11 or 12 people for this service. Notwithstanding all we could do, she was full, or very near it. With a common cargo, as she would have sunk, of course, but we had a great quantity of beeswax and wood on board, which were specifically lighter than the water. As it pleased God that we received this shock in the very crisis of the gale, toward morning we were enabled to employ some means for our safety, which succeeded beyond hope. In about an hour's time the day began to break and the wind abated. We used most of our clothes and bedding to stop the leaks, though the weather was exceedingly cold, especially to us who had so lately left a hot climate. Over these we nailed pieces of boards and at last perceived the water abate. At the beginning of this I was little affected. I pumped hard and endeavored to animate myself and my companions. I told one of them that in a few days this distress would serve us to talk of over a glass of wine. But he, being a less hardened sinner than myself, replied with tears, "No, it is too late now." About 9 o'clock, being almost spent with cold and labor, I went to speak with the captain, who was busy elsewhere. As I was returning, I said, almost without any meaning, "If this will not do, the Lord have mercy on us." This, though spoken with little reflection, was the first desire I had breathed for mercy in many years. I was instantly struck with my own words. As Jehu said once, "What hast thou to do with peace?" so it directly occurred, "What mercy can there be for me?" I was obliged to return to the pump, and there I continued till noon. Almost every passing wave broke over my head, but we made ourselves fast with ropes that we might not be washed away. Indeed, I expected that every time the vessel descended into the sea, she would rise no more. I dreaded death now, and my heart foreboded the worst if the scriptures, which I had long since opposed, were true. Still, I was but half convinced, and remained for a space of time in a sullen frame, a mixture of despair and impatience. I thought that if the Christian religion were true, I could not be forgiven, and was therefore expecting, and almost at times wishing, to know the worst.